With one mighty swing of his bat, Ken Griffey Jr. will have 600 lifetime home runs.
Wow.
That's a lot. Only five players in the history of baseball have achieved that feat. And with each plate appearance, tens of thousands of fans actually have a small stake in Jr.'s record. That's because in 1989, the Upper Deck Baseball Card Company featured a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card in its set that has become the Frampton Comes Alive album, the Malibu Barbie, the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu Grip, the members only jacket of sports memorabilia, meaning everyone has one. Darren Revelle has like seven Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards. He's a sports business reporter for CNBC. He wrote about this card for Slate. Hey, Darren.
How are you? Thanks for having me this morning.
Darren, how did the 89 Upper Deck card achieve this ubiquity?
Well, I think it was basically the time. It was the time in card collecting where it went from, you know, the bicycle spokes and the shoe boxes to, hey, everyone, this is an investment. And Upper Deck helped do that. In 1989, this was their very first set. They put holograms on the back of these cards. It was in foil packs. There was no gum, because God forbid that there would be a gum stain on the back of one of these very valuable cards. So they were telling everyone, this is an investment. Everyone bought it. And so the reason why baseball cards became valuable is because everyone's mom threw it away. What happens when no one's mom throws it away? What happens when no one throws it away? That's what we have here, where every hour there's a Ken Griffey Jr. that's sold on eBay. Every single hour, maybe every single hour since eBay's invention. It's the most common card sold ever on eBay. And despite this, it still has some relative value, which I think is probably an amazing part of the story.
Yeah. I was stupid. I used to collect the gum and seal it in plastic and throw away the cards. But what are the cards? What are they going for on eBay now?
Well, the card industry needed to create a false sense of scarcity, right? Because these obviously weren't scarce. There's definitely more than a million made. So what they did is they started this grading process in 1999, where they slapped this thing between a harder piece of plastic than you're used to, and they'd grade it. Just how mint is it? The most mint Ken Griffey Jr. cards, the ones that are graded 10 or some companies 100, they'll sell for about $250, $300 on eBay. If it's not graded and it might not be a great-looking card in terms of condition, it could sell for $15. So there's a wide range. That's a wide, even wider range from when it was selling for $1,000 and $2,000, and probably shouldn't have in 89 and 90.
Yeah, I worked in a baseball card store from 1986 to 1988. And I saw it firsthand. It was a huge scam perpetrated on the 12-year-olds of America by pretty much baseball card companies.
But maybe we were stupid, you know, because some people say, don't fault the people at Upper Deck. They told you how many they were making. Maybe we didn't realize, my parents didn't realize, no one's parents or kids realized the true economics of how this worked. You know, why we never questioned why baseball cards were an investment. They were investment because at some point there really was more demand than supply. But in 89 and 90 and 91 and 92, that's when we saw the glut. And then we said, oh, this is why baseball cards are valuable. It's the standard supply and demand. And I don't think we realize that. So I think there's a question of whether was it really a scam by the card companies, or were we just stupid?
Yeah. Well, I realized it when I saw a Kevin Seitzer rookie going for about $30.
Yeah, Kevin Seitzer, I remember that.
That was
guy.
A classic one. There were other cards. See, the baseball card collectors looked at things like stamp collecting. When there was a mistake, like the inverted Jenny, those cards would be worth
the
more.
The upside down point,
so,
yes.
Right. So cards like, you probably remember the Billy Ripken card with a naughty word on the bottom of his bat.
Yeah, F face. It's actually 20th anniversary this year. The 88 Fleer, and they had six different versions of it. Do you have the one with the blackout box? Do you have the one that's white out? Do you have the one that has the error on it? And that card was going for $500 at one point, and I just bought it as a conversation piece a couple weeks ago for $2.
$2, that to give you some idea. And then there was also, I remember one with Greg Nettles, you know, Craig Nettles, he spells his name differently than most
right.
Craigs, and that was worth a lot of money.
The Dale Murphy inverted one, and then at some point you're saying, well, they're creating these errors just to get the buzz. I mean, obviously, you know, the Upper Deck has enough employees to figure out that a Dale Murphy card, for example, has a reverse negative. You don't think they look at those things many times? You don't realize that Braves is backwards? I mean, it's just, you know, the trick's on us. The trick was on us then, and the luck had to run out.
In your article, you wrote about a guy I had never heard of. What's his name? Tom
Guideman.
Guideman. What did he do? Why is he important to this whole story?
Well, he was the kid, and this is the intriguing part of the story. He was the kid at the Upper Deck, which was the card shop that preceded the card company. Mm-hmm. Those founders of the card shop then became the founders of Upper Deck. And they said, this guy has an incredible eye for spotting talent. This guy knows who we should slap in between sheets and who we shouldn't sell for $2 because it could be $20 tomorrow. So he became the guy who numbered the sets and decided who would be in the sets. That really wasn't a hard thing to do, you'd think, but Topps didn't even have Ken Griffey Jr. in the set in 1989. They had to put him in Topps Traded, which came later, because he was, you know, in single A. By the end of, you know, April, he was up in the majors, and Topps was feeling stupid they didn't have him in the set. This guy, this guy knew, and that's why Upper Deck was Upper Deck, and Topps was all of a sudden, these guys were behind the game because of it. So Guideman was 18, 19 years old, and he was the one that probably had the most to do with, you know, Upper Deck's success, having the right players in the set
and
in 89.
And Guideman placing Junior number one, that was a very interesting wrinkle to the story, because you make a case that because he was number one, there were more of them on the market. Now, someone might say, wait a minute, there's as many as number one in the set as number 50 in the
set.
Right,
well, there was allegedly a Griffey sheet. Basically, when you make sheets, there's 100 cards in the sheet, and Griffey would be number one, and then you'd have 99. There was part of the reason I wanted to do this story was to try to figure out for sure whether there was ever this Griffey sheet of 100 Griffeys.
Only Griffeys.
Only Griffeys, right. And they'd go out. The story I heard is Upper Deck employees wanted to get a piece of pizza. They'd print out two Griffeys. That was their payment. And I wanted to find out if that was true.
And?
I got down to the plant manager, and he said, I would be the guy to know that didn't happen. But there were more Griffeys because, and maybe they threw out the other 99 cards. The issue was that, because it was number one, it was more likely to get the top of it, you know, either lopped off or miscut, or it was against the blue box because it was the first card in the blue box that Upper Deck had. So people complained. And because Upper Deck was a new company, they felt like customer service should be very good. That included, I just got this Griffey card. It's going to pay for my entire college education. Can you please make sure that it's in great, great condition? And they would take the old one and give them a perfectly new one.
And that's one of the reasons why there are millions of these. Darren Revelle, thanks very much, Darren.
Thanks for having me.
And that is it for this hour of the BPP. We are always online at npr.org/Brian Park. I'm Mike Pesca.
And I'm Rachel Martin. This is the BPP from NPR News.